have several announcements to make. The first one is we want to create a welcome team. This is more than just ushering you into the church. So if you're interested to know more about that, let me just explain just in simple sentences that in some churches, they even welcome you from the parking lot before you even step in the main building. They actually reach out to you right before you even enter the sanctuary. And so I know that many churches do a very good job. And I think our church don't do as good a job. And so please, if you pray about it, if you are available, there is a sign-up sheet outside. The training is next Sunday. After the worship service, have your lunch, and we will have a short training for about an hour. We hope that this will help our newcomers, those who are not connected to the church, to feel connected. Now, I know that many of you are not first-time visitors, or you are not here for the first time. We mentioned that, and we only talk about first-time visitors. But actually, I don't know many of you. Surprised to say that. If I look at you, I really don't know some of you. And so I try every Sunday to meet somebody new, but I will forget. I'm getting old. And especially if I don't have something in my hand with your name and phone number and email and connect with you, I will forget. This morning I met Jack. I've seen him before, but I don't know Jack. And so it would be great if, let's say, those of you who think that I don't know who you are, shoot me an email. You know, introduce yourself. We talk. Let's have lunch, okay? I have two other announcements. We have really this is wonderful news. It's their news for celebration. Holly and Howe they have a new daughter, Evangeline. And I don't think they are here, but we are so happy for them. All right. So they are brand new parents. They have just joined the parents club. Okay. The second big news is that yesterday, Will and Pauletta celebrated their 51st wedding anniversary. Now, how many, you know... Now, that is longer than some of us have been alive, right? So they are out celebrating. But this next Sunday when they come, we're going to have a cake for them and we're going to celebrate for them. So please reserve some time. It's going to be in the Two Flags room next Sunday, all right? It's going to be in the bulletin this coming Sunday. So sort of prepare you for that, okay? Let's turn our Bibles for this morning to... It's not working? Oops, okay. Okay, if you have your Bibles, please turn with me to the Gospel of Luke, chapter 12. Okay. Gospel of Luke, chapter 12. It says, when a crowd of thousands upon thousands had gathered, so that they were crushing each other, Jesus began to speak first to his disciples. Watch out for the yeast of the Pharisees. I mean, the mismatch between their hearts and lives. That's what the yeast of the Pharisee stand for. Nothing is hidden that won't be revealed, and nothing is secret that won't be brought out into the open. Therefore, whatever you have said in the darkness will be heard in the light, and whatever you have whispered in the rooms deep inside the house will be announced from the rooftops. Someone from the crowd said to him, Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. Jesus said to him, Man, who appointed me as judge or referee between you and your brother? Then Jesus said to them, Watch out, guard yourselves against all kinds of greed. After all, one's life isn't determined by one's possessions, even when someone is very wealthy. Then he told them a parable. A certain rich man's land produced a bountiful crop. He said to himself, What will I do? I have no place to store my harvest. Then he thought, Here's what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones.
That's where I'll store all my grain and goods. I'll say to myself, you have stored up plenty of goods enough for several years. Take it easy, eat, drink, and enjoy yourself. But God said to him, fool, tonight you will die. Now who will get the things you have prepared for yourself? This is the way it will be for those who hoard things for themselves and aren't rich towards God. Now this morning we're going to look at grace when life is rich. Do you realize that we need grace when we are poor, but we also need grace when we are rich, because many of us don't know how to handle wealth. Now, some years ago, definitions of happiness were very popular. They were on postcards, they were on posters. What was so interesting about the definition of happiness from all this is that they never mentioned riches or wealth, not a single time. Now, we all know as Christians that wealth alone will not make us happy. We are taught in Sunday school. We're taught to believe in that. But you know what happened is that wealth has a way of bending us, even as believers. Because we know that it does not give us true happiness, but many of us still seek after it as if wealth and riches will make us happy. And I say that because as I look at life and as I look at the church, as I talk to people in general, their lifestyle betray what they believe, because their choices betray their theology. Choices like the school they choose, the jobs they pick, the homes they buy, the things they buy, all this tell us where your value system is. And often if you look at the things we possess, it tells us that maybe this person is thinking that wealth can buy happiness. Now, I was reading just the other day the result of a research done on lottery winners. And an article was written about 20 lottery winners and the big losers, how they blew it. And you know, you and I have probably read something like that, because you think that, wow, when you win the lottery, you'll be happy. You have happiness. You are set for life. And everything will be fine. But you know, this reading, this is just an eye-opener. When you read people and you realize they are real people, then you realize that they weren't happy. They did not become happy. They became really frustrated and sad. See, the world thinks that money will buy happiness. But statistically speaking, if you look at the people who have won big, many of them don't live happy lives. And you know what is worse is that in North Carolina, and I was told that it's the lottery system is very new, 2005. Now Texas, I lived there for 20 over years, is older. It has been going on for more than 20 over years. But if you read the reports, you discover that the people who are sucked into buying lottery thinking that it will bring satisfaction and happiness are usually the poor people, the people who can least afford to part with their money. Now, in North Carolina, we say the lottery is what? Do you even have a name for it? What? The NC Education Lottery. I sure hope that some of you will chase after your... Now, I'm not a citizen. That you will chase after your representative and ask them to give an accounting. You sure the money actually went all to education? Now, I say that because a study has been done all over the U.S. Much of the money collected from lottery ended up in other things other than education. So these are the 20 lottery winners, and they blew it. Just an example. The first one, William Post, won $16.2 million in Pennsylvania in 1988. But he was $1 million in debt within 1 year. Wow, how does a person blow $16 million, actually $17 million, and $1 million in debt? Let me quote what he says. I wish it never happened. It was totally a nightmare. A former girlfriend of his sued him for his share of the winning and won. His brother hired a hitman to kill him. Why? Because maybe then he'll get part of the earnings. He lost all his money, got into debt. He spent time in jail because he fired a gun above the head of a collector, a debt collector. And so he was put in jail. And now Bud is living quietly on $450 a month and on food stamps. Sharon, a lady, 2004, she won $10.5 million in Canada. She bought a big house, fancy cars. She bought things for everybody. She spent her money on a lavish lifestyle, exotic trips, handouts to families, loans to friends. In less than 10 years, she's back riding the bus, working part-time, and living in a rented house. Willie and Nancy Silly. They won $3.8 million. They now call the lottery a curse. Their complaint is that they are bombarded every day by the media. They want to be interviewed. And they were hit by people who want loans and a handout. Let me quote what they say. There are days I wish we were back to just getting paid every 2 weeks. Gerald Muswagon, 1998. He won $10 million. Jackpot in Canada. He blew it all on drinking, partying in only 7 years. Filled with remorse, you know what he did? He hung himself in his parents' garage. Andrew Whitaker won $315 million in the Powerball lottery. Well, that's a lot of money. Let me quote what he said. I wish I had torn that ticket up. Why? He was robbed. He lost his granddaughter to drugs because suddenly she became rich. He was sued. He's now addicted to drinking, gambling, and going to strip clubs. Within 4 years, he lost everything. Another lottery winner said, to tell you the truth, I wish I didn't win. Look at Proverbs 20:21. It says, the more easily you get your wealth, the less good it will do you. Lottery is such an easy way, right? In a sense, it is easy. In a sense, it's very hard. The odds are against you. But you don't have to work for it. You don't have to till the ground. You don't have to help somebody. You don't have to do a job. You know, you just punch a number or whatever. I've never bought a lottery in my life. But I've seen people do that. It seems so easy. But you see, easily gotten wealth don't do us very much good. The New Living Translation says, an inheritance obtained too early in life. Look at the emphasis. It's too early in life is not a blessing in the end. The NLT, the stress is on maturity. Meaning to say that when we are immature, we don't know how to handle wealth. And it will become a problem to us. Ecclesiastes also warns us about the natural outcome of having wealth and riches suddenly. As goods increase, so to those who consume them. All of a sudden, you'll find long-lost relatives and friends come knocking on your door. And you end up having to feed many people. Bottom line, we all have problems dealing with wealth and riches. We need wisdom from God. We need God's grace. When God gives us wealth, we need His grace. We need maturity. We need wisdom on how to use the resources He has given to us. We need His grace to handle this because money and wealth, they are dangerous. It's a precious commodity, but it's very dangerous. Riches can be a blessing, but riches can be a blight. Listen to Paul. We all know this so well. 1 Timothy 6:10. Timothy tells the church in Ephesus, for the love of money is not for money is the root of all evils. It's the love of money. It's our attitude towards money. The source of all kinds of evil. May we have God's grace and maturity to know how to handle wealth and money that He has entrusted to us. When God has given us something, we are stewards, we are managers. Whatever we have don't really belong to us. They are given to us so that we can express our stewardship. God is testing us because He has got more things for us to do in the future. How we use our money, our resources here, will determine what He's going to give us in the future in heaven. Think about it that way. The more we have, the more is required of us. Jesus taught us many surprising truths and riches. One time he taught all the people around him, it is hard for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. It's easier for the camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. Now that was a very shocking statement, especially to a group of Jews. Why? Because the prevailing thinking, which is also the prevailing thinking today, that if you are wealthy, that's a sign that God is blessing you, isn't it? That's what the Jews thought. You are wealthy, sure sign God is blessing you. Is that true? Now look at the drug cartel. They are very wealthy. Does it mean that God is blessing the drug cartel? Right? It doesn't naturally follow. There is a Jewish saying in Jesus' day, whom the Lord loves, He makes rich. That was the prevailing thinking. Therefore, God is blessing you. Now, that's the background to our parable this morning. And when this man came to Jesus for him to divide his inheritance between him and his brother, Jesus taught and gave this parable. That is the background. In Luke 12, 13, which we read just now, he came to him, my brother, don't want to split the inheritance. Please help, in a nutshell. That's what he was saying. Now, we don't know very much except what is given there in that few verses. So we are conjecturing the situation. The father had, probably the father left the estate to the two brothers, not to be split one inheritance. They're supposed to work together. Maybe it's a farm. They're supposed to work at it. But this brother wanted his own share with his name on the title deed. He didn't want to work with his brother. And so he wanted Jesus to come along and divide the inheritance. This man seemed to have a problem with covetousness. It's implied in Jesus' parable, in his teaching here. He was quarreling with his brother over inheritance. Doesn't that sound so modern? Have you heard of people who fight over inheritance? They had a good relationship, but then all because of inheritance. One brother or one sister feel slighted, feel like it's unfair. And as a result, there is quarrel, disharmony. Doesn't it sound so modern? Now, two things will result if Jesus actually entered in and made a decision for this man and actually divided the property. It would mean that there would be a permanent separation between him and his brother. This brother will think that he was right and his other was wrong. Parable Jesus was teaching that greed was this man's motivation in asking Jesus this question. Look at 12:15. Then Jesus said to them, watch out, guard yourself against all kinds of greed. As a result of this man's request, this was the first statement that came out of Jesus' mouth. I'm not going to be a judge now. It's before my time. And then he says, beware. Guard yourself against all kinds of greed. Greed is always bad. Covetousness is always bad. The green eye monster is always bad. And we find that mentioned in 1 Corinthians 6, 9 to 11. A whole long list of sin that Paul was talking about. Right in the middle, he talks about greedy people. People who are covetous. It's not something that we want to be accused of. So, in Luke 12, 17 to 19, the passage that we have read, the parable. Look at this rich man. This story is supposed to illustrate why we should not be covetous. How we should look at wealth. We need grace to handle wealth. Why? Because look at this passage. This guy starts off, he was already a rich man. He has a lot of land. And look at what I've underlined for you, darkened for you. Look at the first person pronoun. He is thinking only of himself. He was not concerned about his poorer neighbor. He wasn't concerned about people who need help. He wasn't thinking of God. He was only thinking of himself. He wasn't thinking of what God wanted him to do with his wealth. Everything revolves around himself. He broke both of Jesus' top commandments. What are they? Love God with everything that we have. And the second commandment is to love your neighbor as yourself. He broke both of them. So Jesus called this man a fool. This foolish man thought only of himself, his own life, his own enjoyment. Does it sound familiar? Do you think only of yourself, your family, your own enjoyment? He thought that he was a master of his possession. I can do whatever I like with what I have because they belong to me. He had the wrong attitude, he had the wrong perspective. And it is so easy, even for Christians, to have this attitude and this perspective. Covetousness is a very slippery slope. We didn't mean to be covetous, but we can become covetous very easily. Now, I've been a pastor long enough to tell you that I've heard with my own ears the boasts of Christians. I've heard Christians who say, I'm a self-made millionaire. And others said, I'm worth $50 million, Pastor. I really hope those Christians are Christians. Because I'm fearful. Because if that's what they talk about, that they're proud of, rather, I'm a son of God. I'm a sinner saved by grace. I'm fearful. This rich man thought only of himself. And he didn't recognize two principles. And I hope you take note of those. The two principles he didn't take note of is that his wealth is really from God. He's only a manager of God's wealth. He's only, the Bible says, a steward. It's really not his. And secondly, that as a result of his wealth, he's obligated to use the wealth for God and God's kingdom and God's people. This rich man committed the sin of omission. He didn't do anything bad. Even look at the passage. He was hardworking. He didn't say anything bad about God or anything bad about people. But he just omitted what he ought to have done. He didn't do bad things, but neither did he use his wealth for the goodness of people around him. He didn't use his wealth for God's kingdom. He was like that servant who buried his talent in the ground. He didn't do anything with it. He thinks it's mine. Jesus' emphasis in this passage is that God is sovereign, and one day we will be answerable to him. You know, life is short. Jesus in the parable says, tonight your soul is required of you, then who's going to get everything that you work so hard for, that you've accumulated for yourself? Jesus said, fool, tonight you will die. Wow, that is sudden. What if you get a call from God and God says, fool, tonight you will die? How would you react? Now who will get all the things that you have accumulated, you have collected? Does that speak of your lifestyle? You are a collector. You're always collecting. You're always hoarding. I should say we, because I'm a collector too. Fool, tonight you will die. Material wealth is only for this life, not the next. This parable answers several important questions. It's in your outline. The first one is, and I have several others, what is so wrong about pursuing material wealth? Is there something wrong with it? No, there's nothing wrong with pursuing material wealth. There were wealthy people, but it is the love of money that is wrong. It is our attitude, how we look at the money, how we look at our position as are we managers of the money or are we owners of the money? You know, we talked about Job last week. If having money is a problem, if having money is a sin, then Job is in big trouble because he was the wealthiest man in his town, in that part of the country. What Jesus was condemning is this man's wrong attitude towards wealth. God praised Job, a wealthy man, not because of his wealth, but because of his spirituality. So the more important kind of wealth that Jesus emphasized is later spoken of in the story in verse 21. In the CEB translation, it says, this is the way it will be for those who hoard things for themselves and became a fool and aren't rich toward God. What is true wealth is whether a person is rich toward God. You know, another translation, the New Living Translation says, yes, a person is a fool to store up earthly wealth but not have a rich relationship with God. Jesus called this man a fool in verse 20. And he's saying that if you have a rich relationship with God, then you are rich. You are not a fool. Question this morning for us really is, how's your relationship with God? Would you consider your relationship with God this morning as being healthy, being rich? Or would you say that your relationship with God this morning is really poor or non-existent? I think most of us would be angry with if somebody points a finger at us and says, you fool. But here Jesus is saying, this man was a fool. What is a fool? A person who lacks prudence, good judgment. He is foolish, he is ignorant. A dictionary says this, he is not unintelligent. He's a smart person, but he just didn't use his brain. Does that describe us? We are smart people, but sometimes we don't use our brain, and that's a fool. Because we didn't think of developing a rich relationship with God. So how is your relationship with God today? If there is a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being perfect and 1 being lousy, where would you put your relationship with God on that line? Very good, perfect, very bad. Where would you put yourself this morning? How would you rate your relationship? This is true wealth. And a little later, Jesus added this teaching. In verse 33 to verse 34, sell your possessions and give to those in need. This will store up treasure for you in heaven. Actually, he's telling us in verse 33 how to be rich. And it's the opposite of our thinking. The person who is rich is the person who sells, who gives away his earthly treasures. Why? Because we can't keep our earthly treasures anyway. So it leads to the appropriate question. So what makes a person a rich person in God's eye? A rich person is a person who stores up treasure in heaven. How do we do that? The passage just now we read, sell your possession. And then there are needy people. Give to their need. Show hospitality. What have you given to those in need? Have you given to those in need? See, friends, having the right idea, knowing that this is the right thing to do, and actually doing it are two different things. Because James tells us, remember, it is a sin to know what you ought to do and then not do it. So if selling your possession, helping the poor, the needy, is putting money into heaven, being rich, how are we doing? See, knowing that is insufficient. Are we doing it? I have met Christians who are very wealthy, who have the right ideas, the right aspirations, even the right vision, the right knowledge of how to spend their money. One time, I was helping a brother from another church. He needed help. So I went to help him. Now, a tragedy has happened in this person's life, caused a change in his thinking. He's rich. He's very rich. I would say he's richer than most of us here. He has two sons. The older son died in an automobile accident. All of a sudden. He wasn't even a driver. He was a passenger. He got killed. The friend killed him. The friend survived. He's not even 21. And this man's life crumbled. He took early retirement from a high-tech company, one of the biggest in Texas. And he set out to do some wonderful things. He said, Paul, can you help me? So I said, sure, I mean, I have a free day. So we went. We went to the courthouse to look at his properties, the documents, the site plans, and I had to do certain things for him. Do you know this brother owned between 50 and 100 homes in Texas, and some were not in Texas even. And I had to go and photocopy all those documents for him. That's how I got to know that he's very wealthy. And he said, I've taken early retirement. I want to set up a scholarship fund for students at Dallas Theological Seminary to help them get a theological education, become pastors and full-time workers. Now, that's a good aspiration, right? Now, I don't know if the scholarship materialized. I don't think so, because I never heard of it. See, that was good aspiration. But you see, wealth has a way of sucking us in. What about you? If you are wealthy, God has given you resources. Has He given you ideas of how to use your wealth? Are you actually doing something about it? How many of us actually carry out those intentions? If God has put a thought in your mind, okay, I want you to use this resource for this purpose, and you agree to do so, did you actually do it? Say, faith without works is dead. I can also say that intentions without actions is dead, or are dead. Are you investing your life in what is temporary or in what is eternal? Are you accumulating earthly or heavenly treasures? See Luke 12:21 says, yes, a person is a fool to store up earthly wealth but not have a rich relationship with God. He makes it very clear. The implication is obvious, comparing earthly, which is temporary, versus what is permanent, relationship with God. Do we give to those in need? Do we give to the needs of the gospel, to get the gospel out to people? This is even more important than meeting people's physical needs. Because if we can share the gospel and somebody is changed, it's eternal. Later on in Luke, Jesus made the point crystal clear. In Luke 16:9, it says, here's a lesson. Use your worldly resources to benefit others and make friends. Then when your earthly possessions are gone, And they will be gone. Because one day we will die. They will welcome you to an eternal home. See the contrast there? We can use our earthly, temporal, short-term gains to win something that is eternal, waiting for us in heaven. The idea is that when we can lead a person to Christ with the money that we have, we give for the gospel, this person becomes a Christian. This person will meet us in heaven. Here, worldly resources, wealth, and earthly resources are contrasted with eternal ones. We can use our temporal wealth to invest in permanent wealth by leading people to heaven. More wealth means more responsibilities. As we reflect on earthly and eternal wealth, two spiritual truths come across to us. The first, earthly wealth is only temporary. Do you realize that? We can't take it with us. Sort of like this cartoon, right? Earthly wealth is only temporal. We can't take it with us. But it certainly didn't stop people trying. Many of us live like we can take it with us. We can. So we can. The second truth is that earthly wealth is relative. Do you realize that? Remember Jesus praised the poor widow who gave two small copper coins. In fact, the two smallest coins that they actually mint. Two small coins. And he praised her. Why? He said, she gave more than all of the rest combined. This is the verse. Luke 21:4. All of them are giving out of their spare change. See, they're wealthy. They won't even miss it. This is their spare change. But this poor widow, she, from her hopeless poverty, has given everything she had, even what she needed to live on. That means when she has given it, she had no lunch, she had no dinner, she had all. See, wealth is relative. And so what happened is that what we can see, God can see. And God is seeing into our lives today. Wealth is relative. See, all of us are very wealthy. All of us are very poor compared to Bill Gates. But all of us are very wealthy compared to a poor guy in Haiti. So wealth is very relative. So I just read a story of the Chilean miners, remember? They were stuck in the mine, and 33 of them were eventually saved, but they were stuck there for many days. I can't remember. It was more than a month. Let's say for the sake of argument, it's a diamond mine. They're right there at the bottom, 2 miles down, and they're sitting in front of a whole pile of diamonds. Do you think the diamonds will do them any good? No. What do they need? What did they need? They need food, they need water, they need air. That was what they needed. See, everything becomes crystal clear when you're stuck in a place like that and there's no escape. And everything becomes relatively unimportant except survival. So God knows our heart. He knows that money and wealth can drive us crazy. He knows why we are attracted to riches. We are afraid of our future. We are afraid that we won't have the necessities for life. That's the reason why the passage ends in chapter 12. He is encouraging us. This is part of the Sermon on the Mount. Don't worry about your life. Don't worry about the things you're going to eat. Don't worry about your body. Don't worry about the things you're going to wear. I know you need them. I will provide for you. That's what he said. And then he said, instead, desire the kingdom. Matthew says, seek first the kingdom. Seek my kingdom first, and all these things will be given to you. See, God's math is very different from ours, right? To have something in heaven, sell everything you have right here. Wow, that's very hard teaching. So in conclusion, what have we learned today? How can we apply this in our lives? I want us to first give a warning and be three examples, encouraging examples. The first is a warning. Jesus warned us in Matthew 19. It is hard for a rich man to enter God's kingdom. Is that what he said? Actually, we read it carefully. It is not hard for a rich man to enter God's kingdom. It is impossible. Why? Because a camel cannot go through the eye of a needle. And if a camel cannot go through an eye of a needle, a rich man will never get into heaven. That's what he was saying. But he said, with God, all things are possible. With God, all things are possible. God is the one who gives us grace to trust. But we need not just grace to trust Him, to become a Christian. But we need grace to live every day, to relate with wealth, riches, okay? Three wonderful examples of people who trust in God and not trust in themselves or their wealth. Dorcas and Donna, who are they? They're just acquaintances of mine. I met them briefly in Texas. But let me tell you, they are wonderful people. Their story is amazing. They are from New Jersey. They took early retirement. They are wealthy. They saw a young seminary student from China. You know, when Chinese students come over, they have no friends. Back then, in the late 80s, in the early 90s, very few Chinese students. And this pastor needed help with housing, with food, with tuition, transportation. And Dorcas and Donald were professionals. They were in the healthcare industry. They heard God tell them, help this young seminary student. And so what happened? They actually bought the house. They take care of the food. They took care of his tuition. And then he moved, that seminary student, moved to Texas to get his master's degree now for 3 years. You know what they did? They moved with him to Texas. Bought a home for him, took care of the food, the tuition. And then he applied to the church that I was pastoring, to be the Chinese pastor. That's how I got to know this story. Nobody in the church knew about it. They showed up one day while he was preaching. These two persons, Dorcas and Donald. And then I found out the pastor is living in a home in Plano, Texas. Not his. Belongs to Dorcas and Donald. And Dorcas and Donald have their own home. Can you imagine? They moved, bought two homes. One for that pastor, one for themselves. And then that pastor moved to San Diego. They moved with that pastor to San Diego. Now you tell me, where is Dorcas and Donald investing their wealth in? In the kingdom. Because this pastor has been in that church in San Diego, as far as I know, more than 15 years already. Pastoring, doing a wonderful job. But he couldn't have done it without Dorcas and Donald. This is one way people use their wealth. They were building up somebody. Estella Pyfrom. Hard to pronounce her name. She's a school teacher, retired. And you know what she did with her retirement? In her retirement? Some of us are retired, I know. This is what she did as a retired school teacher. She took all her money from her retirement funds, $900,000, bought a bus, put computers in it, and went back to her own district to reach out to the underprivileged kids so that they can work on a computer, learn how to use a computer, and be able to read and do all that. Why would somebody do that? Doesn't she know that she needs money for retirement? But that's what she did. Doesn't it remind you of this guy? Do you know this guy? You know, Estella bought a bus, and she called her bus the Brilliant Bus. Our own Brandon bought a bus and called it the Jesus Mobile, right? I mean, he was making a lot of money, right, Brandon, in San Francisco? Computer engineer for Yahoo, but quit after 1 year. But during that 1 year, bought a bus. Instead of renting an apartment, living in an apartment, expensive apartment, he bought a bus that can still move, and he lived in that bus, free rent. And you wonder where he showers every day. That's an interesting question. Now, you may not know, Elder Joe and I went to Kyrgyzstan I think about 4 years ago, 2010. Do you know that a group of Christians here, one of our church members too, contributed to buy a mobile home, assemble it in Kyrgyzstan. It's the only part in that part of the Muslim country where they allow them to have a library. They assemble that, they assemble the playground, and every day the Muslim children will come into that mobile home and they get to read Christian stories from the Bible. That's how some people are using their money, like Estella. All right? Sorry. Go back to this. The last example, Melvin. This story came out of Leadership Magazine very quickly. Four young men, seminary students, were living in a rented home. And one Saturday morning, there was a knock on the door, and it was Melvin. And Melvin comes across as, wow, this guy dressed terribly. He's unshaven. The word is marbleized. I don't know how you say it. His eyes looks like marble, like he was on drugs. And he's unkempt. His clothing is really tattered and torn. And when they look at his shoes, he was actually wearing the same, the mismatched shoes, both left side. So he didn't have a pair of matching shoes. What are you doing here? He introduced himself. I'm Melvin. I just want to make an honest living. He was selling them vegetables. And they don't look very appetizing either. But the four of them said, okay, we'll help him. So they bought his vegetable. And every Saturday, he would come knocking. They became friends. And they discovered that he's not a drug addict. His eyes are like that. Why? Because he has cataracts. And he lives down the road in a shack. And he loves the Lord Jesus Christ. He's a Christian. He loves to sing hymns. He plays the harmonica. And so from then on, every Saturday he showed up, they would be doing all that. And so these four Bible college students were thinking, how can we help Melvin? So they made a plan. And so one Saturday morning, Melvin came, and he was so cheerful. He said, God is so good. Like what Pastor Jerry would say, God is so good. You know why he's so good? Because this morning, Saturday morning, when I woke up, I opened the door, there was this box full of new clothing, shoes and food, you know. And they all smiled because they're the ones who donated the food and the clothing and the shoe. And they went on singing and I said, do you know why God is so good? And the four of them said, you already told us why he's so good. And he said, well, because do you know why? Because there is a needy family down the road. And I gave them all to that needy family. You see, what happened is that poverty is relative, right? And I think most of us are better off than Melvin. So I want to close by asking the same questions that I'll ask you. So what's so wrong about pursuing wealth and riches? We can easily develop a covetous heart. What makes a person a rich person in God's eye? To have a good relationship with your Father. Do you? Are you investing your life in what is temporary or in what is eternal? Where is your investment? Let's stand together for the closing song.